Joe Biden tried speaking again yesterday. It didn't go too well, as you might expect. Also, Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks have gone full-blown woke. It's upsetting. We'll talk about it. Brianna Morello is going to come by to also talk about politics and sports. And then, Jason, we're going to do something different today, folks. Hold on to your seats. Jason Altmaier is a former Democrat congressman. But he wrote a great book. He's a centrist. We have very different opinions on a lot of things. But I think it's important that we discuss them, like I always say. So we're going to do that. He's going to come by today. He supports Biden. I don't, clearly. I think he's a train wreck. But he's going to come by. We'll have a discussion later in the show. I think it'll be interesting. I think it's important. I know there's some out there who say, don't even engage them. Don't even talk to them. I think it's important that we do, and we're going to do it later in the show. So be sure to catch it. It all starts right now. Full show today, very full Tuesday. Lots of guests, as I just said before the intro there. We'll get to them. But real quick, a couple things even before we get to the sponsor. President Trump set to visit Kenosha today. Wants to talk to the Blake family. Father says he doesn't want to talk to him. He's already talked to President Biden, which is hilarious. This is the same guy who was in the Brussels sprouts clip we showed you yesterday. Couldn't handle the top to his water bottle. So this will be interesting today. I'm sure that there'll be some storylines that come out of it that we can discuss tomorrow. The governor's also said he doesn't want Trump to come, which I always think is funny when these governors, these mayors say, I don't want you to do this. I don't, you know, you can't do this, whatever the case might be. He's the president of the United States, the leader of the free world. He's coming with good intentions. Now, are more riots going to happen? Are more things going to happen because people are crazy and can't handle opposing thoughts and opinions, and they can't handle him because they're weak? Yeah, probably. But it's just funny that the governor's saying that. So again, we'll talk more about it tomorrow as stuff comes out. If anything real hot comes from it, we'll do an extra segment sometime later today. But also real quick, and I meant to get to this the other day, and I've got a real problem with this. But did you guys hear about the law that passed the state Senate in Virginia? We've seen tons of stuff pass under Northam, make its way all the way to the top. Some of them failed, thankfully, but lots of radical bills in Virginia, which is very much controlled, at least right now, by Democrats. But they changed this law. You know, law enforcement are under assault all throughout the country, all because of a few bad apples and this narrative that Black Lives Matter pushes. Now big corporations are pushing, mainstream media pushes that all cops are bad, despite the fact that they're actually, in fact, very selfless individuals going out to protect the community and are the very people that you call when you're in trouble. But that's too much logic. So Virginia, though, has taken things a step further. It used to be a class 6 felony, I believe. A felony, though, no doubt, to assault a police officer. Makes sense, right? That's not something you do. You shouldn't assault anyone, but you've always known that assaulting a police officer is going to end badly. And again, in Virginia, with a sentence to prison, a felony, that goes on your record. But Democrats there have decided that it's a good idea, and it passed. Basically, the vote was right along party lines, and it passed because they control the Senate, to lower that and make it now just a misdemeanor if you assault a police officer. Basically saying, we're not even hiding it anymore. We don't care about law enforcement officers. We would rather dump money and resources into social justice initiatives and forego taking care of these brave men and women who, yes, again, there are probably, even in the state of Virginia, some bad apples. There's probably some bad people cruising the streets with a badge and a gun, but the lion's share of them are exactly who you want out there doing that. And they're hiding behind it. The Dems are hiding behind it, saying, we're just doing it to differentiate between, you know, more significant, what is the serious assaults and minor assaults. Come on. That's an awful, awful thing to say. And they're saying it only gets dropped to a misdemeanor if the officer isn't harmed in the altercation. But here's my problem with it. One, it's just stupid, and everyone should see that it's stupid. Set laws so people don't do people are still going to do it anyways, even when if it is still felony. There's a lot of dumb people out there. But it sets an awful precedent because it's already believed right now in this 2020 millennial PC progressive whatever Marxist culture that's developing over here on the fringe. They're loud. It's still a small percentage, but they're really loud. So it seems like it's everywhere. But it's already considered okay with them and condoned by the mainstream media and the Democrat Party to assault police officers. Are they actively calling for it at the Democrat Party, the mainstream media? No, but they're also not condemning it. So it's kind of the same thing. And when you see it growing and happening as much as it is now, there should be some stiff pushback against it. So to me, whether it's the officer gets hurt, the officer doesn't get hurt, you just don't do it. And they've also removed the mandatory minimum 6 month jail sentence that went along with the old law. So this to me is disastrous. Support your first responders. Thank them if you see them. Understand that almost whatever, 99, a high percentage of them are really good stand-up individuals trying to keep their community safe. And they're doing it on a crappy salary. This isn't about money, folks. It's about passion for them. It's about doing the right thing. And it's sad that they are getting this rap from the world. And it's more sad that people aren't standing up and defending them that have platforms. The stars, the politicians, the mainstream media. You can change this conversation in a hot minute if you start saying there are some bad ones, but for the most part, they are good. Support them, yada, 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 and do so with passing laws that make sense, not stuff like this, by giving them more resources, not less. So again, thank them. Buy their meal. Buy them a cup of coffee if you see them. They need our love and respect right now. Okay, on with the program. Real quick, I'm one of our sponsors. Been telling you about Mammoth Nation. They are on a mission to get President Trump and other GOP members reelected. And we talk about it every day. We talk about how important this election is. And you should see it. You should see the stark contrast between chaos and law and order, between opposing American history and our values and loving American history and our values, even though not all of it's perfect, and making America first. So it's a critical election. And you can make a difference. You can go to mammothnation.com right now. You can join for $19 a year. It's better than a donation. You get discounts on TV, wireless, hotel, all sorts of awesome stuff. But you need to join now so we can get Republican victories this fall. I'm a lifetime member, and I know that you will be glad that you joined. Also, as I said yesterday, and we'll keep saying, there is a new lottery system in place. Just by joining, you are entered into a contest. Third place will get a Bose SoundLink color portable Bluetooth speaker. Second place is going to get a Keurig. I know there's debate. I don't even know how you say that. I have it. I love it. But they're going to get that. They're going to get a coffee maker, a K-Duo single serve and Karoff coffee maker. And then first place will get a 65-inch Samsung 4K UHD smart TV. Winners will be announced on election day. So head on over to mammothnation.com right now and join. You're going to be glad that you did. All right, let's get on to it. Let's cruise the headlines. Let's talk Biden. Let's talk Joe Biden. He is the reminder. It's funny. It's a funny thing, but he is the presidential nominee for the Democrats. I know you know that, but it's remarkable to me. But he tried speaking again yesterday. And as you can imagine, and probably predicted, it didn't go so well. Here's how it went. Roll one.
Just since the outbreak, it's taken more than 100 years. Look, here's the lives. When you think about it, more lives this year than any other year for the past 100 years. More than 180,000 lives in just 6 months.
What?
An average of 1,000.
What are you talking about, Joe? I love it. I mean, think about it. I mean, how many times have we seen that? That's kind of one of his go-to, oh crap, I don't remember what I'm saying. I've either lost the prompter or lost my notes, lost my train of thought. That's your candidate, Dems. That's your candidate. We don't have clips for it. We didn't pull him today, but you could see outside of that venue that he was at in Pittsburgh, a very small spattering of Biden supporters gathering, trying to get, you know, pro Joe chants going, this, that, and the other. And I tweeted about this yesterday. It literally sounded quieter than like a youth soccer game, like pre-pandemic, like where all parents and grandparents and friends and family could go. Still a tiny crowd, granted, it's youth soccer. But it was quieter than that. Like, there's no excitement for this guy, and that's why. He stays in his basement. He can't speak. He's not healthy, which again, I don't wish him poor health. I just wish that they weren't running him. And I do in the sense that it's going to make it hopefully a victory for President Trump. But I wish that they weren't dumb enough to think that this was a good idea to make him the face. And yes, I get it. Strings are being pulled behind the scenes, and they're not really just putting all their eggs in the Joe Biden basket. There's a lot more to it than that. The DNC has different plans, and it's not just Joe Biden's our guy. That's not it. But the reality is this is still the face of what is out there. This is what people are seeing and hearing, and it's just remarkable. And I talk about the people on the outside trying to muster up a chant, you know, the couple handfuls of people that were out there. But here's what it looked inside. It was really bizarre. This is a tweet Jack Posobiec put out, and it shows inside. You know, you've got your social distance circles, and there's what, six circles spaced out. So what's confusing to me is you won't leave your basement, but then you come out because you want to attack Trump and make a couple policy statements, mainly, which we're going to get to in a second, the fact that now he's calling the violence out there what it is, violence. Something he's decided he didn't want to do before. But you won't leave your basement. But then you leave your basement, travel to Pittsburgh, only to have a room full of five or six people, one of which is the cameraman. I just find it odd. It's really, everything that they are doing is bizarre, and it's strange, and it's hard to put your finger on exactly what's happening with it, because all of it is so strange that, you know, any rational line of thoughts about, okay, it seems like maybe they're doing this, and the other, all of a sudden are taken off the table, because then they do something else that throws a wrench in, and you're like, well, never mind, I don't know what they're doing. Like, it just doesn't make sense. I know it doesn't make sense. I know it's not good for America. But, you know, it was interesting to see this. You look at his speech, and depending on the feed you had, you got different angles, of course, and whatnot. But we all think, look, my day's very full between all the stuff we do for the show, all the stuff I do outside of the show, our staff, like everyone is working really hard. We're all busy. We all think it's tough. But you know who's got it tougher? This guy, this interpreter, and we can play it here. We'll just put it on mute. But you can see Joe Biden's interpreter, as he's having that gaffe we saw earlier, watch his face. He starts to get confused. I mean, he's on track here, and then he can hear Joe. Wait, what's he saying? No, never mind. Hold, stop. I mean, I don't speak sign language. I admire those who do. But this guy is like, dear Lord, give me a break. Like, figure out what you're saying. Stop changing, because he's 100 years, 100 people, 100, you know. So you think your day's tough. At least you're not Joe Biden's interpreter. That's all I got to say. But in this speech, and kind of one of the big things that came out is, you know, they are going out now and trying to flip the script, as Democrats always do. You know, they take an approach to slam Trump, try and drag him through the mud. It doesn't work. And then they literally just flip the story around and try it that way. And that's what they're doing now, because it's been over 90 days in Portland, for example, with violence, looting, fires, assault on police officers. Now we can add murder into that discussion, sadly, with Jay Bishop this weekend. But they've been silent on it, calling it peaceful the whole time. Yes, little pockets here and there have condemned it. But the loud voices, Biden being the one that should be the loudest, have not condemned it until just recently here. Don Lemon, we talked about last week, and CNN started saying, we're seeing this change in the poll numbers. We need to stop this. And literally was that bold and saying, basically, that's why. We don't care about businesses. We don't care about people or the livelihood or of the businesses there or our police officers. We care about the fact that we hate President Trump and things are changing. And, oh, people don't like the violence. Oh, we need to stop this. We need to stop this. So this plan has backfired. And now Biden's coming out and admitting it. Not full blown. You know, again, he had a conversation the other day with the National Guard where he still called it mostly peaceful protesters that were out there, which is absurd. Yes, there are peaceful protesters, but calling it widespread peaceful is not only stupid, but it's reckless. It's dangerous. It's ignorant. It's lots of things. It's not true, though. But these were his comments on Rule 3.
senseless violence of looting and burning and destruction of property. I want to make it absolutely clear, something very clear about all of this. Rioting is not protesting. Looting is not protesting. Setting fires is not protesting. None of this is protesting. It's lawlessness, plain and simple. And those who do it should be prosecuted. Violence will not bring change. It'll only bring destruction. It's wrong in every way.
So, but
it divides instead of unites.
Those statements are true. You should be prosecuted. You should not be doing those things. Those things are not protesting. Holding a poster board, wearing a t-shirt, going out, maybe having a megaphone, although I always think it comes through as loud and jar. And I hate, you know me, I hate protests. I think that they're a useless waste of time. But if you feel good about it, you feel like it's bringing change or allowing your voice to be heard, fine, go do it. I don't care. Go do it. Go be heard. Most people aren't going to listen, but go be heard. But there is a distinct line from holding up a sign and then creating a Molotov cocktail behind it and throwing it at buildings or police officers or innocent bystanders. The lines are so clear. I mean, you do not, I'm not the smartest person on the planet, people. You do not have to be smart to see the clear distinction between what's been happening in Portland, Kenosha, Seattle, Chicago, albeit in a different form, in some cases, not all. But you don't have to be smart to see that is against the law. That is violent. That is destructive. That should be prosecuted to the fullest extent. And then this angry group of mouth breathers over here who just want change and want their voice to be heard and have poster boards and signs and hats and shirts and whatever else, that's fine. But they're very different. So, and they've known this. Don't be fooled by the fact that they're coming out and saying it now. They've known this. It's exactly what Don said the other day on CNN. They hoped, they put all their eggs into the basket that these riots and this violence was going to make President Trump look bad. And they encouraged it, some of them verbally, you know, with Presley and others saying there needs to be more unrest in the streets. Some of them, by not saying anything, encouraged it to continue on because their message has been clear for over, you know, since President Trump took office. We do not like this person. We will do everything we can to stop him. Though, again, I still don't know why. With so many great things that have happened under him, there's claims of him being authoritarian. A dictator, all these things, which again, if that was the case, none of the stuff that would be happening, if that's happening in the streets, would be happening. Your voice wouldn't be heard. You wouldn't be allowed to do this. It's literally so far opposite of the claims that they're making. It's funny. But now they're flipping the script because again, they're seeing that this is coming back to bite them, and the Americans once again don't like what Democrats are offering. Democrats have always been, but more so than ever, are way, way out of touch with middle America, with the everyday people. Are they in touch with some of the folks in the big Democrat city? Sure. But across the board, they do not understand the American voice, which is why they were shocked when President Trump took office in 2016 and won that election. But now they're seeing it's not working, so they're flipping the script and blaming Trump for the violence in the streets that they have not condemned the whole time up until just now. It's remarkable. I think it's too late. I think they overplayed their cards, and it'll come back to bite them big time. The other thing that's going to come back to bite them is you've got Leo Terrell out there, big civil rights guy, saying that Trump is going to get the most black votes for a GOP person in history. And there's polls. There's the new Zogby Strategies EMI research poll, which was taken just last week after the RNC, that shows that Trump support from the black voters is at 20%. Biden's at 75%. You could say, well, 75%, that sounds really good. But you got to look at the history and you got to look at the data of how this worked. For Trump, that's 12 points more than he had in 2016. And strategists inside say that he only needs, I think, 11% to win. They're saying he's at 20 right now. So Biden has not done well. And a lot of people thought he would do well in with some regards. Other, you know, there's folks who said the one crime bill from the 90s would hurt him. There's others who thought, no, he's going to be good for the black community and they're going to like him. But it's proving to be otherwise. They're not happy with it. Black communities, Black individuals are seeing that President Trump has done a lot for them and for other minority communities for that matter. So experts say a Democrat needs 90% in high turnout among the black community. Again, the numbers just aren't looking good for Biden. And at the end of the speech yesterday, he didn't, which I think, you know, the audience that's outside, that's dismal and laughable. The blunders during his speech, and then this at the end, you know, he walks off. This is how he finished the speech. Roll four.
Fear never builds the future, but hope does. And building the future is what America does, what we've always done. In fact, it's what we have done best and continue to do best. This is the United States of America. There's not a single thing beyond our capacity when we decide to do it together. So let's get together. I want to thank you all. May God bless you, and may God protect our troops.
Got to grab that mask before you walk off. But no questions, right? Now, granted, we saw the scene earlier. There weren't many people in the room. But he left his basement to come to another damn near empty facility. Okay. We'll figure that out later. But he did that. But then this guy will not take questions because he can't go off script. He's not there enough to do it. And they know that they don't want him out about. They don't want him doing interviews with Chris Wallace and Bret Baier and some of these folks. They only will do them with staunch allies who are going to help them. And they don't want him taking questions because they know that he will screw it up. And he will. He will. I can't wait to see what happens with the debates and what their excuse is going to be to try and get out of it. Pelosi, several others have said he shouldn't debate. And everyone knows that's true. Everyone knows, Dems, Republicans, people in between, that it's going to be entertaining TV and that Joe Biden, it just won't go well for him. He's going to get angry. He's going to say stupid things. He's going to stumble over his facts and his numbers. I can't wait. I hope it happens. But if it doesn't, I can't wait to see what the excuses are. And I hope that America's smart enough to see the sham that this campaign is. I think this is the worst campaign in history on the Dem side. Okay, moving on. We've got to try and rush through these before the break. But I'm really, you guys know how much I love football. I place, frankly, too much emphasis and value on it. And I say that a lot, too. But I really loved Pete Carroll. I loved his attitude, his effort, his energy. He's got a lot of spring in his step. He's an older coach who's been around the league, did a hell of a job at USC, has always made things fun there. And, of course, he's a great football coach. He's done great with the Seattle Seahawks. But the stupidity that he showed in this recent press conference as it pertains to systemic racism and social justice initiatives and all of this stuff, really, I tell you, these sports leagues, these professional sports leagues are blowing it. And we're going to talk more about it later in the show in a different light with Brianna Morella. But either he believes this and his facts are wrong, or he's bowing to the mob. Either way, it's bad. This is what he said, roll four.
An incredible offseason in camp, and now we're finally together working. But never before this year has it been so deep and so rich in the exchanges with our players in how they've taken this opportunity to teach us more and deeper about what the life of a black man is like in America, black men and women. And they've been compelled to speak out more than ever. There's been less fear and less concern of, you know, what's going to happen. I love our environment is such that our guys are willing to say what they can say, and they're okay about that, which we need to hear because.
So that's one. Do we have another? I think we've got another. We'll just roll into this one, and then I'll say something right after.
This has been a process of truth telling and reality checks that just brings me to a point where, as we're speaking about all that's going on, and this is about racism in America, that white people don't know. They don't know enough. And they need to be coached up, and they need to be educated about what the heck is going on in this world. The black people can't scream anymore. They can't march anymore. They can't bare their souls anymore to what they've lived with for hundreds of years, because white guys came over from Europe and started a new country with a great idea and a great ideals and wrote down great writings and laws and all of that about democracy and freedom and equality for all. And then it ain't happened. That's not what happened, because we went down this other road here. We followed economics and rich white guys making money, and they put together a system of slavery, and we've never left it, really.
All right, so it's never you get the idea.
Yeah.
It's disappointing to hear. And look, we're not perfect. America's not perfect. We've got a jaded past. There's things that we shouldn't be proud of, that we should learn from, and in most regards, we have. But first of all, you're one of those rich white guys, Pete. You've got several, lots and lots and lots of black individuals on your team who make millions upon millions of dollars every year. And look, I'm not saying there aren't areas of the country where it is more difficult for a member of the black community. But those areas are in Democrat cities who continue to put these people down and lie to them. It's not the whole country doing this. It's not the GOP doing this. It's very, very Democrat-centric. Yes, there's radical groups over here on the right who are racist. That's awful. There's radical groups on the left who are... Take all the fringe people out of it, because they don't count. They're there. They're awful. But when it comes to the national discussion, they shouldn't count. But to me, you're welcome to have your opinion. And if that's how you feel about it, and you feel like we collectively as a country are racist, which I think is not true at all, then you're welcome to that. But don't tell the rest of us that we're racist because you have a different opinion than we do, and you see information different than we do. Maybe you're right on certain things. But it's the intent, and it's the heart of things, and it's the message that is all jacked up with BLM. And they've gotten to all these people. I mean, you've got Drew Brees and a couple teammates. Drew Brees, of course, in under fire for saying it's okay to stand for the anthem, then back down after all the Floyd stuff. Now he's wearing Jacob Blake's name, who had a warrant out for sexual assault, restraining order, had a knife, fought with police officers. He's wearing his name on his helmet with some teammates. We're celebrating awful people. Now, again, in the cities where there are problems and it's tougher for this minority community or the other, and there's towns in Central Florida and parts of Florida that are more white, and it's the same thing, just different. It's hard to get out of there. It's hard to get out of this little hick town in Florida, or this little town in wherever, fill in the blank. I'm not saying that they're equal or the same, but my point is most places aren't racist. Most people aren't racist. There are pockets that we need to work on, but use the platform for good. Don't use the platform to tell the rest of us that we're awful people. And for you listening, this is a tough year. It's hard going through this, but if you're not racist in your heart, some of you are, and that's awful, but if you're not racist in your heart, don't feel guilty. Doesn't mean you can't help in areas, but don't feel guilty just because someone else is trying to shame you into thinking the exact same way they do. It's driving me crazy. And we've got to do better. Real quick on George Floyd. Defense attorney Eric Nelson, who's representing Chauvin, is claiming that Floyd died of drug overdose rather than the police homicide that's being talked about. We've shared that. We've talked about some of the different autopsy reports, the drugs that were in his symptoms. But this is one of the quotes in some of the files that came out. Put simply, Mr. Floyd could not breathe because he had ingested a lethal dose of fentanyl and possibly a speedball, the motion stated in part. Combined with sickle cell trait, his pre-existing heart conditions, Mr. Floyd used fentanyl and methamphetamine, most likely killed him. Adding fentanyl and methamphetamine to Mr. Floyd's existing health issues was tantamount to lighting a fuse on a bomb. There's also allegedly, and we'll cover this more throughout the week, but allegedly body cam footage showing Floyd ingesting fentanyl during the rest, a fatal dose during the arrest because he didn't want to have it on his person when he was arrested. So you combine all of that, and it just goes to show what we've talked about a lot. Get some more facts. Get some more facts before you lunge out and say all cops are bad, before you start burning down cities, which, by the way, should not be the response, even if he was a saint. He could have been the best guy ever who tragically was killed. The response is not burn things down and kill people. That's just, you should know that as a human, as an adult, or even as a teen, whatever, all the people that are out there on the street. But we'll see where this goes. But all of this information that keeps coming out shows we should have had more information first. People need to wait until they have more information, and then we'll go there. All right, we're going to take a break. On the other side, Democratic Congressman, former Democratic Congressman Jason Altmaier. He's also an author. He'll join us. We'll talk about everything that's going on with the election. Stick around. Just over 60 days, folks, over 60 days from the election. As we can all see, political tensions are obviously high, maybe as divided as we've ever been as a country. And several polls and numbers that are out there are changing, some for the betterment of one candidate, some for the other. But joining us to discuss all of this and kind of where we're going is former Congressman Jason Altmaier. He's also the author of a great book that you should check out called Dead Center, How Political Polarization Divided America and What We Can Do About It. Jason, good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me, Drew.
Absolutely. Well, it's been a while, and as we were talking about off camera, I'm telling you folks, and we'll plug the book again at the end, but this is the mindset that America needs right now, is dead center and people kind of coming back. Like, I know that there's a strong push on either side, you know, for the kind of the fringe, the far right, the far left, but ultimately as a country, we need to kind of come back to a little bit more reason. But let's skip past that for now. Let's talk Biden for a second. You served in Congress. You're a Democrat. Did the Democrats pick the right guy with Biden?
I actually think that they did. I've known the vice president for 15 years or more. And if you look at who else was in that primary and the other ways it could possibly have gone, for someone like me who's interested in bipartisanship and reaching across the aisle, I think that he was definitely the best candidate for that.
What about the suggestions that, and you know him, I don't know him. You know, I talk about him all the time, but I don't know him, and nor do most people out there. Do you think that he was the most moderate of all of them? I mean, that's kind of what you're saying there, but do you think he was the most moderate, but do you also think he is healthy enough at this point? Lots of concerns about, you know, his condition, and the person behind him is not necessarily moderate. How does that all play?
He was always going to pick somebody, I think, who trended towards the left, that there needed to be a coming together of those two sides, given that Senator Sanders almost got the nomination. And I think that would have been a disaster for the Democratic Party had he won the nomination. We would be in a totally different place. You know, I see the concern that people are raising about the vice president. All I can say is, again, I've known him for a long time. I don't have that concern. I think he's being measured in what he's saying in his public speaking. We are in a very unusual time because of the inability to go out and do retail politics in the same way we've done it. So I've watched the campaign unfold. I think he's in a very good position to win, and I don't have any concerns, certainly, about his personal health.
What about the young bucks in the Democrat Party who are very loud, have pushed away from more establishment policies, such as ones that I'm sure you endorsed and other Democrats have endorsed? What about them? Does Joe Biden cave to the, because there's concerns there with some of them being told that they would have higher roles in his cabinet should he win. Do they have a loud voice like a lot of people are concerned about if he wins, or are they kind of tamped down a little bit?
I think you and I have the same concern on that, I will say. We may not agree on everything, but I think on that we are in agreement. I just wrote an op-ed on that topic, that there's going to be a very forceful push, if he's successful, from the left to move very quickly in that direction. And I just think that would be a huge mistake. This is an opportunity to begin the process of bringing the country together. That will not happen overnight, and not every candidate would be in position to do that, but I think he is. But if he is in position where he's accepting these very far left ideas right out of the gate and they're moving in a direction that the country is uncomfortable with, I think the party will have missed a huge opportunity to start to rebuild the trust that is missing in our government right now.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the big, I mean, look, I'm not a Biden guy. I'm very much a conservative, as you know, and would love for things to go that way. But that is my biggest concern here. And at first, when this whole thing kicked off and the primaries were going and we knew who the candidates were going to be, I said multiple times, that's the guy that I hope they go with, because even though I don't think he's been a very effective politician, he is at least more moderate and can relate to more Americans on certain values than a lot of the Bernies, for example, and a lot of the other candidates that were out there. But now the concern has been just that, and just what we just were talking about, that, well, you know, maybe that's not true, though, because if he listens to all these people and is just glad to be there and accepts some of these ideas, it's going to go way too far to the left. And it's going to put our country in a way worse situation than we're already in. We're already very divided. You don't bring it back together by going further to one side. You bring it back together by having policies that most people can get behind. So again, I thought that was the reason he would be a great candidate. Now I do have my concerns about it. Hopefully, for our side, he doesn't win. But hopefully, if he does, he sticks to who he used to be and not going down this other path.
I think he is going to win. I'm from Pennsylvania, as you know. I know that part of the country pretty well. I just don't think that the president has the same level of support he had in those Rust Belt states. And we both live in Florida. We may see the world differently, but I don't think that the president's going to win Florida either. I think that Vice President Biden will win, and I think the truth will be in his performance. And I hope that he does go down the road of moderation, of working with both sides, of reconciliation. He's portrayed himself as a bridge to the future of the Democratic Party. I think he has the opportunity, even if he does only serve one term, to be a monumentally significant president if he were to reach across the aisle, work with both sides, seek compromise and reconciliation, and try to bring the country together. There will be a huge battle in the Democratic Party about the philosophy of the party moving forward, but that has not been Vice President Biden's philosophy with regard to moving too far to the left, and I hope he stays true to who he is, and if he does, I think he'll be a very significant president in history.
Interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't see Florida and Pennsylvania go. Pennsylvania, obviously, the toss-up. I think, I agree to disagree on that, but I think that will be interesting for sure to see how those swing states go. I think the Midwest is going to be interesting. I think Minnesota, for example, is an interesting place because it's, and I'm from Minnesota originally. Obviously my politics and the state's traditional politics are very different, but I think that the response that you see there to the violence and the riots and a lot of what's gone on since George Floyd has a lot of people thinking a little differently there. And I'm not saying that Trump wins Minnesota, but there's a lot of states like that where it seems to be more of a conversation than it's been before. And not necessarily because it's pro-Trump and these are MAGA people, but because there's concerns about how, you know, the mayor of Minneapolis and the governor has handled this. Do you see that from the Democrat side? Is there concern that certain states maybe are more in play than past years where it was just a slam dunk?
I think Minnesota is really the only state. You are correct that was very close last time. The president almost won it. It's possible that state could flip. But I think I would be concerned as a Republican that the swing states that have traditionally been in play appear to be pretty solidly blue, whereas states like Georgia, North Carolina, Arizona, maybe even Texas, states that have trended red in the past, those are the new swing states. And if the president has to buy airtime in those states and he needs to fight those battles politically in states that he should already have in the bag, that doesn't bode well for success in the other states that decided the outcome of the election last time. Remember, it was only 77,000 votes across Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin that determined the outcome. That could very easily go the other way next time.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, that's a fair analysis. There are some states that have definitely become more purple that used to be more red, and Florida has a lot of that with it. There's been a lot more discussion in Texas, and I know a lot of people say, and I say this to my audience and people living there. I know a lot of people say, "Oh, Texas will never go this way," but if you look, there are some concerns that it could. I don't think it's going to now, but it's trending more and more purple than it is further and further red. So I think that there are concerns out there for states. And I think, frankly, look, it comes down to both parties always not, you know, needing to not be complacent. You think you've got this state? Don't act that way. You think you've got this state? Don't act that way. Be passionate about it. Don't burn stuff, but be passionate about how you feel. Speaking of burning, one of the things that I think, and I'm pleased with it because, again, that's how I want this election to go, but one of the things I think the Dems have struggled with here and kind of gambled on, and it didn't go well, is this violence across the country. There's not been widespread condemnation of it. There hasn't necessarily been people condoning it. There's individuals who have, of course, but it's largely been the silence on it that's concerning, and I think has woken up a lot of independent or more moderate voters who weren't sure but are now saying, I don't want this, so I'm going to vote this way. I'm not going to vote for the Democrats. How do the Democrats approach that? How do you guys see that?
I think you and I could have a very long, interesting conversation about this at another time. And the reason is I do have a concern that there's a fear within the circle, not just the political circle of support for the vice president, but in the media generally of folks who would like to see President Trump defeated. There's a fear that if they talk too much about those riots and, you know, there was just a supporter of the president who was killed over the weekend, tragically. I think there's a fear that if they talk too much about that, that has the ability to spin out of control and move in the direction that you're speaking of in concern, justifiable concern about what's happening. So I do think that there has been a move in the media to talk a lot less about that than they otherwise would. And I think that leaves it to the vice president to do what he did yesterday in Western Pennsylvania, to go out and talk about his perspective, because if he just leaves it to the media to cover those things that are happening, I don't believe that's going to happen. And that might have a negative influence on his chances in the election.
Yeah, no, I definitely see that as if things, and I tend to think that they will go that way. If Trump wins, I think that's going to be one of the biggest things that swings it. But what do I know? Last question before we got to run here. We're 2024. Let's skip ahead. All right. This 2020 sucks. I think we can all agree we don't like this year for a number of reasons. What is the future of the Democrat Party? Is there someone who's going to rise up and bring things back more to the center, like of the younger generation? That is that voice. Because most of which, again, we see the squad members who are terrifying and very angry, some of them. But is there another batch of people coming up that could be, you know, a reason for hope for the Democrat Party?
Yeah, I've written about this too, and you know my record in Congress. I was a centrist. I did engage in compromise and working with both sides. I have to say, I wrote a book on polarization. I care a lot about this issue. I do think that the Democratic Party is moving to the left. If you look at issues, I think the country as a whole is moving to the left. Let me put it that way. And it's being driven by the demographic change. And issues like marriage equality, climate change, gun issues. If you look today versus where those issues were 10 years ago politically, it's night and day. Abortion would be another one. And I just feel like the Democratic Party has leaders. They have young, charismatic leaders on the left. I don't agree philosophically with many of the things that they talk about it with the direction of where they want to take policy. But I do see it, and I do have to admit, I think that the times have changed and the demographics of the country are different. You're talking 4 years from now. I think if you look 10 or 15 years, you're going to see a very strong leftward shift in the Democratic Party and also in the country.
Yeah, that terrifies me. And I think going too strong either way is just never the answer. But I don't disagree with you. I do think that's where that's going. Real quick on the book. You've got a great book, Dead Center. Again, your track record is strong. And look, there's people in this audience who are going to be mad that there's a Democrat even on this show. But keep in mind, Jason's track record of voting is very centrist. He listens to both sides, and I think it's important. That's why we're doing this interview. I think it's important to have these discussions. We're not going to fix anything without discussions, and that's something that he talks about in the book. So Where's the best place to find the book, and how can people support it?
Any of the online book retailers, Amazon certainly be the best one, but Barnes & Noble. And it's gotten a great response, and it's had a sort of rejuvenation of interest given what's happening in the country. It really speaks to the polarization that you're seeing in the country today. And most importantly, I have suggestions on how to solve it and move forward together.
I love it. Well, again, I appreciate you being here. I appreciate you having the ability to have a discussion, even though we disagree on most things. I think it's really important that some of that happens and other people can see that kind of discussion and dialogue. So again, thanks for being here, folks. Go check out the book. You can do it at Amazon, any of the big retailers. We'll look forward to having you back, Jason.
Thank you, Drew. Great to see you.
You too. All right, on the other side, we're going to talk about politics, but as it pertains to sports. Political commentator Brianna Morella will join us. And I'm not too happy about where things are going. We'll talk about it. Stick around. All right. So welcome back. Joining me now, I'm excited about this. I mean, I'm always excited, but I'm excited about this segment because joining me now is political commentator. She's all over Twitter. She's all over kind of everywhere. She does all kinds of stuff, but it's Brianna Morello. And Brianna, welcome to the show. It's good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
So you're involved in a ton of stuff. Obviously, you talk a lot of politics, but you're also, and I wanted to spend a little time on this, talking about sports because you're a self-described MLB enthusiast.
Yeah.
So before we get into that specifically, are you or were you into other sports too, or is baseball just your jam?
It's pretty much been baseball. Prior to getting into the political side of things, I did work over at MLB. I worked over in their media department, so the vast majority of my experience has always been baseball. So the political side's recently new, so I've got a lot of experience.
All right, I love it. So how do you feel now? So we're seeing all of this unfold before us, the tragic year that is 2020. It's awful. I hate it. But sports is where, really, honestly, the other stuff is disappointing. The violence, awful. Yeah, death is bad. But, like, sports are so important to me that to see it go down this path is, like, the biggest dagger in the heart that I could imagine. And I know that sounds shallow, but I don't care. But baseball, I didn't see baseball going down this path. Like, were you surprised to see America's pastime do this and go full BLM social justice warrior?
Yeah, absolutely. I was very shocked. I'm a big Yankees fan personally. So when all this stuff started coming out, I was like, I know my Yankees are not going to weigh in on any of this. They're going to, you know, kind of be a little reserved on this issue. And then opening day comes and they have the BLM central right behind home plate. I mean, right behind the pitcher's mound. I mean, it was disgusting. I haven't seen a single baseball game this year because it just completely turned me off. You know, the recent Jacobs Blake's case, we didn't know all the facts, and yet all these athletes are jumping on the story. I mean, it's overall just so disappointing, and it was really disappointing to see even the Mets, you know, walking off the field the other day. What are you walking off for? You don't know any of the facts. What are you protesting?
Yeah, everyone, I mean, they jump to conclusions so quick to, in their opinion, you know, build up this brand as I'm woke, I'm the social justice warrior. But really, they do. They end up looking so stupid. I know that you've tweeted some about it. Like, you know, they boycotted some, but then quickly realized that they needed to get back to business and jumped back into playing. They, you know, the NBA's boycott was hilariously short, especially for them, who's really more of a social justice initiative with a little bit of sports on the side. But they do. They jump into this. There's no data. I mean, we're still getting data on the Floyd case, for Pete's sakes. Like, it's not perfect. We don't have everything, but we have a lot. The Blake case is so raw. It's so new. And to see these people jump out like, nope, not doing it, not playing. I loved Urlacher's comments, by the way. I don't know if you saw those. But, like, not only do they jump into it, but they don't allow anyone to question why they've jumped into it.
Yeah, so it was very alarming seeing them all jump ahead of the Blake case. You know, we now know why police were there. And police were there because a young woman, you know, made sexual assault claims against him, I believe, back in May. And the worst part about it, in her claim, she details the fact that he sexually assaulted her in front of her own child. And for some reason, all these athletes are falling on this BLM sword, trying to say that they support him, not knowing all the facts. And now this all comes out. I mean, even some of them were even saying that it was another unarmed black man killed. And we now know, based on his own admission, that he was armed. You know, nobody really wanted to wait for the facts to come out. They all jumped on it so fast. And it's just overall disappointing. I find it very comical, though, that LeBron James said that he had to go to Barack Obama to ask for some guidance if he should end this protest or if he should continue it going. I mean, LeBron James, who do you think you are where you have so much weight on these kind of political issues?
Yeah.
Just play basketball.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. Just, I mean, Laura Ingraham got in trouble for saying it, but just dribble the ball. Just go do your thing. Like, you're very well paid. You can't relate to for any of these injustices that are happening, Blake, and some of these ones are not, but like for anything that is happening that we're unaware of, like you can't relate to these people anyways. It blows my mind. But speaking of relating to things and people, there are owners across all the leagues, not just MLB, not just NBA. I think NBA is actually going to be safe because again, their demographic is different. Their level of social justice wokeness is different, and that's kind of expected a little bit more from that league. But MLB, NHL, I mean, NHL shocked me when they went this way, and you know you're going to see it in the NFL, which is disheartening come the fall. But these owners, the Dallas Stars owner, for example, came out this week and said, yeah, we're losing tons of season ticket holders and lots of money. And it's like, well, yeah, no crap. Like, you're standing beside a Marxist organization, self-described Marxist organization who wants to destroy America. But despite him saying that, he said they're going to stick with it. They're going to stick with their principles and continue to support those initiatives. At some point, doesn't that end? Isn't a capitalist somewhere in the room stand up and say, not only is this stupid, but we're losing lots of money, so it's double stupid, and just stop it?
Yeah, I mean, you're alienating your fan base, and it's so many people feel so uncomfortable about this. I can't even imagine what it's like for the athletes who are on these teams and can't actually speak out because you're so outnumbered and you're labeled a racist if you don't support this movement. It must be awful. I mean, you're literally supporting something that you don't believe in. I remember that baseball player who refused to get down and take a knee, and he cited just being, you know, Christian, and he was attacked. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't seem to be. If you don't agree with these people, they don't want to hear your opinion. It's either you're with us or you're against us, rather than, you know what, I'm going to respect whatever your belief is, and I'm not going to pressure you into following us. You know, the NHL was just so alarming, though, like you said. We weren't expecting it, and I don't know who helped organize it, but it definitely was not something I would encourage.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, and I think what's funny about it, too, is some of them have got to realize that they're standing on, you know, a load of lies. It's not true. You know, even black players out there, whatever league they're in, a lot of them have got to know that's not true. Some of them I know just are committed to believing it. They think it. They believe it, you know, in their bones. But, you know, you see people like Drew Brees, some of these people who've been shaming the player for the, I think it was the Giants, but whoever it was, who get shamed for this stuff, for having their own opinion, which is okay, which is what America used to be great for. Then they concede, like in the case of Drew Brees, okay, I was wrong, this, that, and the other. You know that he believes in the flag. You know this, that, and the other. You know everything that's being said right now is just to pacify you. Like, and it's not actually real. Like, that doesn't feel good. It's like, someone can say that I'm attractive. I know they're lying. Like, I'm like you want people to say things that are genuine and believe it. And I just, the whole thing is so remarkable. I'm so tired of it.
You know what it reminds me of? If you recall, when all these domestic violence cases were coming up in the NFL, the MLB, they all wanted to be progressive and made policies, just kind of giving guidelines on suspensions. And it seemed to silence everyone. And that was like this huge thing. But now this movement has shifted to Black Lives Matter, and it seems like everyone's jumping on board. They weren't on board when Kaepernick was doing it, but now they're all on board. And I wonder why. Is it because now corporate America has kind of accepted it, and so they feel like they have to also take this on? Or do they authentically believe in what the Black Lives Matter message is? And I don't think that they actually do. I do believe most of them are respectable human beings, and they actually knew the details about what BLM stands for. They wouldn't want to support it. So there's a lot of questions to it. I think it's becoming trendy, and everyone just kind of wants to jump on board so they don't look like they're a racist, rather than be outspoken and speak what's actually on your mind.
Yeah. Well, we got to get back to the point where there's discussion, and it sounds contrary for, someone of my past experiences of being overseas and doing what I did to say, let's just work on kindness, people, and discussion. Like, I know that's not what I did for a living, but like, that's what we need now. So let's do it. And there's got to be some education with it too, because golly, it's like, you know, all these discussions, whether it's Black Lives Matter, the statement, Black Lives Matter, the organization, it's mail-in voting. Well, there's universal mail-in voting and there's absentee, and they're very different. Like, all these things are very different, but the narrative that's being pushed is as if they're not. And again, it comes down to people being educated. Well, listen, we are going to do something here. We're going to keep you around for after hours. For the rest of you, we're going to wrap up this show. But you can follow Brianna on Twitter. We can plop that up on the screen there. We'll do it again in after hours if you're taking off and not going to stick around to see the after hours segment, where we're going to talk about, you know, you always, when you're talking about sports, you transition right to rape cases in New York. So that's what we're going to do. We'll do it in after hours. You can catch it right here on the channel. So stick around, find that clip. If you're driving, it'll be in the audio version. Don't worry. You just keep listening. It's coming up. Thanks for watching today. Be sure to give us a like on Facebook, Twitter, Parler, all those places. Subscribe down here on YouTube. And remember, we've all got opinions. We've got ideas. It's important that we talk about them. This is my show. We'll see you tomorrow. We still got Brianna Morello with us. And now, as we said at the end of the show, we're going to transition from sports, wokeness, politics, to a really awful thing that happened over the weekend in New York. You've probably seen the footage of it by now, but Brianna and I are going to talk about it. She knows New York. She knows people in New York, and she's, you know, we're going to talk about this case. But if you didn't see it, we'll roll the clip real quick. Here it is. This is happening at, I think, 11 a.m. it was, or sometime during the day in New York on a subway platform. This joker right here attempts to rape this woman, physically, sexually assault her. And yeah, so that's New York. That's de Blasio's New York. You've seen a lot of crazy stuff happening in that city up there. Well, what say you on all this?
Repeat that last part. Sorry, you broke up.
I was just saying, what are your thoughts on all of this? I mean, all the stuff that's happening in New York, it's so brazen now. I mean, people are getting shot and paralyzed on the way to pick up toothpaste. They're getting beat up and assaulted here. And then you're seeing instances like this where, you know, that's obviously always awful. But it's daytime on the subway platform, and he's still trying.
Yeah, we're talking about 11 a.m. on a Saturday. You're not safe in New York City at that time. We're seeing this. We're seeing this all over New York, mainly because of the bail reform legislation that was activated January of 2020. Now, all of a sudden, people are arrested and they're immediately released, and there's no discretion from judges at all. This gentleman, we're not sure if he has a criminal background or a mental health issue, but he allegedly threw this woman down to the ground as she was awaiting her subway and got on top of her and attempted to rape her in front of a group of people just standing on the platform. And I think the most alarming part of this video, besides just how cold and disturbing that story is the simple fact that on a busy platform, I mean, we could physically see him, there's someone recording it, there's someone also behind it. Gentlemen just not jumping in to stop the incident. Instead, what they're doing is they're recording it and they're just telling him to stop.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, back in the day, the New York that I knew, you get kicked in the head for doing something like this. And they would call the police after. I mean, it's crazy. They let him get away. He was later arrested. And we're now learning that he did, upon being interrogated, he did admit that that is him in the video. And he didn't deny anything. And he waived his Miranda rights. I mean, this is an individual who's sick and probably shouldn't be on the streets. But something tells me he'll be back in the streets within a year. I don't envision him being locked up for a very long time.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, as long as you've got the rules and regulations, laws that de Blasio has put in place, which are basically there are no rules, you're going to keep seeing this kind of stuff. And that bugged me too, what you just said there. And it bugs me in a lot of videos we've seen. And it's just the culture that's kind of pervasive everywhere now. It's everyone grabs their phone and is quick to film stuff and not to help. No. Especially in these big scenes where there's lots of people. Someone's stupid. Someone's going to film it. Don't you worry. It's 2020. But people do the right thing. Like, if you see something wrong, step up and be the person that we're supposed to be. We're supposed to take care of each other. And that irked me as well. Obviously, at a certain point, it stopped, and thankfully it ended, but it should have never started, and it should have never even gotten as far as it did.
Yeah, I mean, this is a 25-year-old young woman who is probably traumatized from this event. I mean, thank God he did stop, but what if he didn't stop? I mean, what point do people intervene? It's alarming that they thought that just videotaping would be acceptable. I would be ashamed if somebody I knew, whether my brother, my father, saw a woman get thrown on the ground and some guy attempt to rape her, and all I did was pull out their phones. I feel like we should be raising a better generation of men than that. Now, let's say you are afraid for yourself. I mean, you guys could outnumber him easily.
Yeah.
If all it would have taken to do was a quick kick to the head, it really wouldn't have taken that much to get him off her. So the fact that nobody did anything is infuriating. This isn't the New York that I loved. It's completely changed. We're seeing all these crazy crimes being committed. A lot of them are on, you know, surveillance tapes now. And it's alarming. You know, people a lot of the times like to just blame de Blasio. Yes, he's radical. Yes, he's absolutely crazy. But if you look at what's going through the New York legislature, you know, there's even proposed legislation to legalize prostitution right now in New York. This is how crazy these people are. They don't understand what human trafficking. They don't really care to understand it. They just want to be the first to get things done. And like bail reform, as we've seen, it's failing in New York. They continue to push things knowing that it's probably going to fail, but it's for their own agenda because they want to be the first to hit that little liberal bell. I don't even understand it myself. It's alarming. It's infuriating. And it just seems like women, we cannot live in New York City anymore. We have to leave because you cannot defend yourself and you will become the victim of an assault if you stay.
Yeah. Well, and you hear, I mean, I don't know how the numbers look and all that, but you hear of mass exodus happening there, of people getting out because it has changed so much. Is that a real thing? Are people leaving there?
Yeah, so apparently people are moving, and we see this all the time now. People think that, you know, they no longer want to live in New York. I spoke to a real estate agent who told me that she's, like, selling homes like crazy in Long Island because people are trying to migrate off of New York City. And unfortunately, that's not good for anyone. That's not good for me. That's not good for wherever you've moved to, because these people are not accepting blame for their own policies that they voted in. They believed in these liberal policies. They sounded great, but now they're being implemented. They don't understand. They don't make that connection. They just maybe will just blame like one bad politician rather than the actual party. The New York Democratic Party is absolutely corrupt. They do not care for New Yorkers' safety, and they're going to continue to be persistent and passing bad legislation and, you know, raising taxes and just making it unlivable conditions. And unfortunately, people who are moving and migrating out, they aren't educated enough to understand why they're leaving, and they're going to bring those policies to places like where you and I live, and it's very scary.
Yeah, no, definitely, it is. Yeah, leave that stuff up there. We don't need it here. I'm curious though, like not just in New York, but all these cities. Like we've talked a lot on the show about how I think that the Dems have overplayed their cards in cities like Portland, Seattle, now Kenosha, Minneapolis, etc., where they've not only not condemned the violence, but they've condoned it. And I think it's backfiring, and people are saying hell no. And some of those places, not all, and frankly, maybe none of them, but there's conversation at least that some of them might flip from blue to red. Like there's conversation about it happening in Minnesota right now. It's a tight race there. I'll believe it when I see it, but I do believe that it's a real discussion and it's a real thing. Do you think that that is happening, albeit in different form, for New York? People are fed up seeing these criminals released, seeing this violent crime, seeing the way that things were handled during COVID, whatever, fill in the blank with the tragedy that has been this leadership or lack thereof under de Blasio. Are people going to push back and maybe does it create an opportunity for someone to step in there with different ideas?
Well, I'm going to throw a wild card your way. I was a registered Democrat until early 2019. And when I saw this legislation being passed and going through and these ideas being proposed in New York, I thought this is radical, this is crazy. And, you know, tried stepping up to the plate to speak out against it. And for some reason we were being silenced. So I made the switch, and I talked to my friends who are also making the switch. I do see it as a common theme, but a lot of us aren't sticking around in New York anymore. The ones that, you know, understand where we went wrong, we are switching, and we're making sure not to make those same mistakes elsewhere. But I also, I don't know. I mean, right now, the people who are staying in New York are the people who probably won't change their minds or change their views. It's going to be individuals who are liberal, and they think that this will lead to I guess, like a happier way of life for others, and they just don't see any wrongdoing in it. So I don't know. I mean, we continue to talk about like potential candidates to run for New York City mayor, and we're hearing all these names being thrown out there. And I don't know if New York City is ready for a Republican just yet. I think that there are probably just going to be a lot of loyal blue voters that go out there and push forward whatever candidates on that side, and without doing some research. So I don't know. I don't know if New York City's actually learned their lesson. I think it's going to take probably a little bit more to send a lot of those people over the edge. The ones that have been pushed over the edge, I feel like, have left, and they're not returning.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's you're probably right. I'm sure it won't get to that point. You know, it's just like the Dems on the national level. And frankly, either side that's hardened, far right, far left, whatever, they're not changing. They're just not going to change. It's changing the minds of the people who are just left of center, just right of center, and the 1.5 people that are center, and trying to get them to think about things in a smarter way and hopefully change the tune there. Well, listen, we got to run. This was good though. I really appreciate you sticking around chatting about this. You know, it's crazy what's happening up there. And people kick, if you see that, kick the dude's ass. Like, I mean, this is a clear, and it's not even chivalry. That's like your duty. Like, you see that happening. Sad that it's the case. Sad that you and I had to talk about that today. But we do appreciate you coming by. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you guys for having me.
You got it. All right, guys, I said it at the end of the regular show today as well. But follow Brianna if you don't already. A lot of you do, because she's got a great following. Super active, but follow her on Twitter. We appreciate you stopping by. We hope you're enjoying the new after hour thing. Let us know if you're not. We're probably going to still do it, but let us know. You're going to let us know. You always do. And we'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow.